Welcome back to the City of Champions podcast. In episode 5, we talk about the Dodgers sweep of the Rockies, the upcoming trip to San Diego. Then we move over to Lakerland to talk about their last two games against the Hornets Celtics and give an AD update. To episode 5 of the City of Champions podcast. Lots to talk about today. We've got the Dodgers in the Rockies series, the bullpen, and our trip to Dodger Stadium South. Then we'll dive into Lakers Hornets, Lakers Celtics, and give an update on AD. Overall, a great series against the Rockies. Swept them again. We're hot. We're on fire. We're on everyone's power rankings list at the very top. That's who we are, the Dodgers 2021. We're going to run it back. Lots happened this series, you know, lots of good things. The bullpen just shut everyone out, you know, decided after giving up all those runs these past few series, they were going to start pitching. So good to see them back and awake. We had Mookie's first monster bomb in front of the LA Dodgers crowd. And, you know, we got to see more of the stadium, sort of what's going on, where the home runs are landing. So that was also pretty fun. What were your overall thoughts on that, Gene?
Just another sweep, man. It's just what we do. Just another sweep for the Dodgers. You know, the Rockies are not a great team. They'll probably finish at the bottom of the NL West. But, you know, we got to take care of business, and that's what we did, man. We got there. We got the three W's that we needed. Like you said, bullpen was lights out. Our man Justin Turner, man, just old reliable, bro. Just the dude just keeps hitting. Like you said, man, home runs by Muncy, home runs by Mookie, home runs by Turner, nacho home runs by Turner. Just
nacho,
nacho home runs, dog. By Turner, and just a great series by the team overall, man. We're stacked, bro. That's just how I feel right now. We're just a stacked team from top to bottom.
Yeah, no doubt. And it seems like, I mean, everyone's contributing, really. It's not one guy or another guy's hot streak that we're running. McKinstry with a timely home run again. I believe it was the eighth inning of game 2. You know, the game was tight, so that extra homework gave us a one-run cushion, and that's sort of what we come to expect from our veterans, not from our rookies. And so that's an added contribution to, again, his overall early success. So I'm really happy with that. But let's, you know, break it down game by game. What'd you think about Trevor Bauer's dominance and his shutout?
Yo, Trevor Bauer is nasty, bro. Trevor Bauer is better than what I imagined, honestly. You know, coming into this season, there was a lot of talk about the fact that he pitched only in the NL Central last season, and the NL Central wasn't that great, and he's only had one good season besides, you know, his Cy Young season last season. So just a lot of Trevor Bauer haters out there. And I'll be honest, I was one of them before he went to the Dodgers, man. I was not a big Trevor Bauer fan at all. But what I've seen from him so far, the dude is just lights out, man. The fastball, the cutter, the slider, they're all nasty pitches, all plus pitches. And he's just doing a great job for us to start off, man. Just great starts after great starts, a lot of strikeouts. And also the big thing that I like about Trevor Bauer is that he just gives us length in each of his starts, man. He just really goes deep into games. He's someone that, you know, could throw 100 plus pitches, no problem. And that's just what he's been doing for us game after game.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, like you said, you know, he looked dominant. He went in there, shut those guys down. Fifth inning, 8 pitches. Sixth inning, 1-2-3. At one point, he retired 14 straight batters and then finished the game out with only 98 pitches. Overall, he had 9 strikeouts or 10 strikeouts? Something up.
Nah, he had 9, man. He was just short of getting another 10 strikeouts. Finished with 9.
There you go. So 9 strikeouts. That is a dominant start. Go ahead.
And just one hit. He's not giving up a lot of hits. He's not walking a lot of batters, man. And he's being super, like you mentioned, like the pitch count and you know, the efficient innings. He's just a super efficient pitcher, man. It's really amazing.
It's weird because we almost forget that we have Bauer after seeing Kershaw and Buehler dominate. And it's like, oh, now we've got, you know, a Cy Young Award winner. So it's nuts to think about that. But yeah, game 1 was a success in my opinion. 1-5 homeward. Monster bombs by Muncy. Monster bomb by Mookie, his first homer in front of the LA crowd. So that was exciting. You know, good for him. Really happy for him. And again, yeah, you know, just overall good hitting.
Yeah, definitely. And just a note on David Price, man, he's really starting to find his groove in this series. He had two, I believe he pitched two innings and just really starting to find his groove, especially in this first game. A quick, just 11 pitch inning, but had two strikeouts. So fastballs hovering around 94. So we're starting to see good things from David Price, man. And if David Price can find his groove, if David Price can find his rhythm and join this already, what I feel is going to be an elite bullpen, man, I don't know, man. We're just so stacked. Like, it's crazy. I don't know what else to say, but there's so much depth on this roster in all places, man. Considering we're playing without Cody Bellinger, right? We're playing without a former MVP, and we're still sweeping teams and still putting up runs. Like you said, 1-5 homer. It's ridiculous, bro. We're just too good.
Which is why it was so interesting that the next couple of games were, you know, blowouts perhaps. Game two was a 4-2 win. It was pretty tight there till the end. Then that's, you know, when McKinstry sort of gave it that one run cushion with his homer. Again, really timely. It's the kind of support we need in late innings of those kinds of games, especially when you've got, you know, Jansen coming in. Again, it's sort of a little bit nerve-wracking when he comes in with a one-run lead. Those are the moments when he's tended to choke in the past, and so getting that extra one was definitely helpful. Jansen overall, it was a weird sort of inning. He had three strikeouts, but he had way too many pitches, in my opinion. Threw 12 of 19 for strikes, which isn't bad, but it isn't great either, you know, especially with your closer. You want him to make less pitches, maybe 14 at most, but you want him to go in there and dominate.
So game two, man, so you mentioned that we were kind of surprised that we didn't really handle business and just dominate the Rockies in games two and three of the series. But one of the things that I noticed just the whole series, man, the umpire crew was really squeezing us in the strike zone. Just a lot of times where I thought that pitches should have been strikes and are calling them balls, and then guys are walking or guys are getting hits right after. So that's kind of what happened to Dustin May in this game. He only went 4 1/3, gave up 7 hits, 2 earned runs. But really it was just the fifth, and he started struggling with his command, but also just the umpires just kind of squeezing him, man, and just making it hard on him. But the bullpen did a good job in that game. Bullpen goes 4 2/3, kind of picks him up, only 2 hits, no earned runs, 1 walk, 6 K. And you talked about Kenley Jansen. Man, I felt bad talking about Kenley Jansen every time, bro, because I feel like every time we talk about Kenley Jansen, I don't have the best things to say, man. It's like I have like one pod where I'm like super hyped on him. I have another pod where I'm not too hyped on him. And this kind of made me go back again. Like, and he was rested, but he's just inconsistent. That's really what it is. He's very inconsistent. And I saw that again in this start. So we talked about, or I should say not his start, but this closed when he got the save. We talked about when he got the save against the Nationals, right? How he just looked electric. We're back to, you know, 2017 Kenley Jansen. He was sitting 94-95. But this game, he's sitting 89-94. There was just a wide range in his pitches. And I don't know if that's something he was doing purposeful, but you hear it from the Dodger fans, man. After that first walk, Dodger Stadium was booing Kenley Jansen. And that's just because the fans, if we've seen it after 2017, kind of year after year, he's just gotten more and more inconsistent. And we're tired of it as fans, man. It's just, we're the best team in baseball. Like, why do we have to deal with an inconsistent closer, right? So that's frustrating. But also,
yeah, I mean, how much of this do you think has to do with, like, Roberts trying to play a good coach and sort of, like, appease his star?
There's definitely a little bit of, like, being, like, a player's manager, right? They talk that you're a player's coach where you stroke the ego of your players and you leave them in the game and you give them the opportunities that they're used to and stuff of that nature. And you talk positively about them in the media and everything like that. And I don't by any means want Roberts to speak negatively about Kenley, but for me, like, it's just, we need to see more consistency out of him. And again, he struck out the next three batters after he got that walk. But it's just, I don't know, man. Just watching him pitch, it's like a different pitcher every game. And that's my concern, because if I threw out, let's say, Corey Knebel, for example, every Dodger fan who's watched every game like we have would say, every time Corey Knebel pitches, you know what you're getting. You're getting 97 and you're getting that nasty curveball. With Kenley, I don't know what I'm going to get. Am I going to get 94, 95 with movement? Am I going to get 87, 88 with movement? Am I going to get, you know, no control of the cutter? So it's just, that's the challenge. And I think that's why Dodger fans were booing him. And it sucks, man. You never want to boo your own team. But at the same time, man, it's the city of LA, man. We're the city of champions. We have high expectations. So yeah, it's only, you know, the whatever game of the season, like the 10th or 11th game of the season. It's still early on, but you got to bring it, man. You got to bring it in the city of LA. We have high expectations. And so, you know, Kenley said he was mad after the game. He said, I'm pitching mad. I'm pitching angry from now on. Well, good, dog. Pitch angry and throw harder and be more consistent, you know. But still, got love for Kenley. Just want to see some consistency.
That's really what it is, that consistency that we've maybe been too accustomed to seeing. And now it, you know, doesn't come about very often. And it is frustrating. And to your point, Knebel, who came in one inning before Kenley, retired the side on six pitches, six of them strikes, one of them a strikeout, just goes to show who should be leading the way for the Dodgers in the bullpen. That's Knebel. He's been dominant. He continues to be dominant. And I don't know how much more it's going to take before Roberts starts to see that. Sometimes you just have to move on. And this is one of those times. But, you know, enough about Kenley. We did come down on him pretty hard. So game three, you know, Urias. So for me, he pitched well. He pitched well. He had some really bad luck, bad defense. But in the six innings he pitched, he only threw 90 pitches. He had six strikeouts. He only had two walks. He allowed seven hits, which isn't terrible. But he did have four earned runs, and that sort of just throws you off, right? How could a guy who only threw 90 pitches have allowed four earned runs? It just doesn't add up. Something seems off, and that's exactly what it was. What'd you think about those plays? What'd you think about the fielding overall?
This has kind of been the one area, and I've talked about this before on the pod, just the one area where I feel like the Dodgers need to clean it up is their defense, man. Really, I've talked about the middle infield. Like, I just feel like they're not flipping the double plays. Need to flip a lot of balls, getting underneath gloves and whatnot. This specific inning, in the sixth inning for Julio Urias, it was the blooper to right field to Zach McKinstry. He picks it up, but he bobbles it, trying to go with a quick transition. He bobbles it, which allows one run to score. Now we have four runs in, and he was charged with that fourth run. And then it's a throw to Taylor, and then there's kind of like a, you know, they got a guy, you know, kind of in between the bases. And then the guy from third tries to go home and Taylor airmails it and the guy scores. And that's the fifth run, but they didn't charge him with that fifth run. But it's just, yeah, like you said, man, just a little bit of bad luck, a little bit of bad defense. Also, just the umpire, bro. Like, the umpires really just were not good this series, man. They were really squeezing us, and kind of unfortunate because those are the umpires we're going to see in the next series down in San Diego. But yeah, I mean, overall, like, I'm not Julio Pitts, fine. I'd like to see him, you know, maybe strike out a couple more batters, but it is what it is, man. I ain't tripping on it. We got the dub, so all good.
Yeah, that's right. And another appearance from David Price, who, again, like you said, he's on fire. He's pitching really well. He had, two strikeouts, did allow two hits, but still he had two strikeouts, and he got the save in that game. So all good things from David Price. You know, really good hitting from Justin Turner. He's on fire, like you
Justin
said.
Justin Turner, man. Can we just... I know we gave Justin Turner props last podcast, man, but my God, dude, Justin Turner, bro. Just, I was, man, last year, towards the end of the season and in the playoffs, you know, our postseason run, I was very critical of Justin Turner. I'll be the first one to say it. I felt like his bat speed was off. I felt like he couldn't keep up with the fastball, especially high and inside. He was really struggling, and I was really concerned about him in, you know, the World Series, but, you know, he did okay. He did well for us. And so then when we re-signed him, I was like, cool, you know, two-year deal, decent amount of money, but man, he is coming out, and that bat is crazy, man. He was a 5-for-7 in the series, scored three runs, five RBIs, two home runs, man. Last I checked, and you know, these stats might be a little bit off, but he was at a 390 average. He has eight extra base hits on the year, 11 RBIs, 435 on base percentage, and 1166 OPS. The dude is elite. He is just, yeah. He's playing out of his mind, and man, if he can have a great season like this, wow, the league is... I don't know what to say, bro. I've been saying it all podcast, man. We're stacked. We're just too good. I don't know.
That's really what it comes down to. And some crazy statistics, right? I'm just going to read off. Mookie Betts batting 323. Corey Seager batting 356. Justin Turner at 432. So higher than that. 380. Wow. Yeah. And then Max Muncy at 366.
Oh, man.
Just think about that. Those are, you know, first four hitters all batting over like 350, crushing the ball, almost like a cheat code in a video game. Yeah, Seager, man. Like, how can you get that guy out? And then having to, having to deal with Mookie, having to deal with Seager next, and then having to deal with, you know, Muncy and Turner. How can you pitch around that? How can you pitch to that?
And also, man, it's the depth of the lineup, bro, because Cody Bellinger's not even in the lineup right now, right? And he's going to get going eventually. And Will Smith hasn't really got going. He's hitting, you know, he's hitting for power. He's putting the ball pretty hard, but he hasn't really got going just yet. Chris Taylor, doing Chris Taylor things, man. He's always great. So it's just, yeah, man, the depth of our lineup is just ridiculous. I feel bad for pitchers when they have to pitch against us.
Yeah, it's going to be a nightmare for them for this entire year, but it'll be fun for us. So sucks for them. We went through enough of sucking in our lifetimes to not brag a little bit, not going to lie. But yeah, you know, really happy with that Rockies series overall. Had some, you know, really great performances. Again, no earned runs allowed by the bullpen. Everyone just hitting outside their mind. No one really struggling. I know Lux was 0 for 12, but then he broke that slump. So, he was back hitting. McKinstry doing McKinstry things, and he's a rookie. So overall, you know, just a really strong sweep. Maybe a little bit closer than it should have been, but we, you know, pulled it off. Gained some steam going into San Diego. So, you know, really excited about that series. What are you most looking forward to over the next 3 days?
Just a competition. You know, we've played the Rockies twice, the Oakland A's, and we played a Nationals team that had a bunch of guys on COVID protocol. So I'm just looking forward to the competition, bro. Tatis was activated earlier today, so he's good to go. He's in the lineup. He's hitting, I believe, second. And, you know, we'll face Weathers, but we'll face their two big acquisitions in Darvish and Blake Snell. Obviously, Joe Musgrove as well, but he's not pitching this series. This is what the Padres stacked their team to compete against us. So here we come, and we're coming down to their, you know, down to San Diego to play them for three, you know. And so I'm just looking forward to the competition. I'm looking forward to us playing one of the better teams in baseball, and I just want to see what we look like, man. What does our pitching look like? We'll be throwing Bueller in game one. I believe it's Bueller. Yeah, we'll go Bueller, Kershaw, Bauer. So we're throwing our three best pitchers, and so I'm looking forward to a competitive series, man. I'm looking forward to a little bit of shit talking. I'm looking forward to a little bit of, I wanted to get, you know, I want some benches clearing, maybe, you know. I want Trevor Bauer strutting on the mound. I want him staring down the, you know, the Padres bench and or the Padres dugout after he strikes someone out. I want him collecting swords. You know, shout out to the pitching ninja. I want him, you know, I just want all of that Bauer swagger. I want just all the shit talking. I want all the Padres swagger. You know, I just want an intense series, man, because we play them, you know, 19 games. So these are the first three. So I just want it to be intense all year.
Man, you said it better than anyone could have. Intensity, shit talking, looking forward to all of it. And, you know, there's some sort of, you know, history with the two teams, Machado, the Dodgers, Bauer, Machado. So it's going to be interesting to see how he pitches against him, against Snell. Again, I feel like there's a ton of history with, you know, this series, you know, going into this weekend. You've got Snell, who, you know, was pulled too early in the World Series. You've got Darvish, who just let us down and broke our hearts in 2017. People still don't know if he was tipping his pitches or if he just did that bad, but he just, you know, broke our hearts. Something I'll never forget. You know, you've got that relationship. You've got Machado. You've got the talking point of Tatis coming back from that, you know, shoulder subluxation. So it is just packed with action. And I mean, again, I want to see that swagger. I want to see the, you know, McGregor's, you know, strut. I want to see how Darvish pitches. I want us to crush Darvish. I want us to, you know, knock Snell out of the game before the sixth inning to, you know, confirm any doubt anyone was having. Like, we knew we were going to win that game. He probably didn't. He probably thought that he could have rescued Tampa Bay some way, somehow. I'm looking forward to just crushing that hope and that doubt in his mind and in anyone else's mind. So yeah, it's going to be a crazy, you know, series to say the least.
I want fighting too, right? Who doesn't like a little bit of fighting? But hit me with a prediction, bro. Three games. How do you think we sweep? 2-1? You think we lose? You think we get swept? What are you thinking, man? Hit me with a prediction real quick before we close off the Dodger segment.
I think Bueller struggles this game. I think Kershaw goes out, dominates like he always does. And I think Bauer goes out and dominates. I feel like we'll take 3 of 3. If I give them one, it's tonight's game, just because, again, the adrenaline going into the game. They've got more to prove than us. You know, they're angry. So all the emotions, everything sort of coming together, I could see them winning tonight. I hope they don't, and I ultimately don't think they will. I think Kershaw Darvish will be, it'll be a tight game. It'll open up late, you know, later in the game, late innings. And then Bauer Snell is just going to be a showdown. And I think we'll get to Snell at around like the fifth inning. He'll be at around 80 pitches, and that's when we're going to start to get on top of him.
Okay, so you're saying 2-1.
Yeah, 2-1.
Got you. Yeah, I'm thinking 2-1 also, bro. I'm thinking we'll take two of the three. But see, I actually have I have Buehler and Bauer getting the dub, and I have Kershaw losing. I feel like the Padres hit Kershaw pretty well. And so I feel like he you know, in the past, he's given up some homers, and I feel like he'll maybe give up a couple homers in his start Saturday. But I have Buehler. I like the way Buehler's looked early on. I feel like he'll continue with that. He's looked pretty nasty. You know, he pitched the Padres well in the playoffs. And then I have Bauer, man. I think this is what we got Bauer for, you know, these big series. And I think he's going to relish it, and I think he's going to deal. All right, City of Champions podcast listener, thank you for joining us for this next segment on your Los Angeles Lakers. We had two games. We finished up the 7-game road trip in Charlotte, where we played the Charlotte Hornets and got that W. We came back home on Thursday to face our rivals, the very hated Boston Celtics. And unfortunately, we took a loss in that first game home after that road trip. But let's get into these games now. So the Hornets game had some injuries. We had AD out still. We had Bron still out. We had Keith still out. But also the Hornets were dealing with some injuries of their own with LaMelo, Hayward, Washington, and Rozier out. You know, end of the road trip, man, and end of the road trip games, a lot of kind of, you know, low energy, heavy legs to start out, you know, rough start to the game, very poor shooting to kind of get going. But, you know, we picked it up in the second quarter. We went on a nice little run in the third quarter, and, you know, eventually we're able to pull out the win. Edgar, just tell me some things you saw in this game, some of your initial thoughts.
Kuzma. Throwing it down.
Oh, man. That was a poster, bro.
That was a poster. And I didn't even think he had it in him. He's not usually a high flyer. He goes through the layup. Didn't know he had it in him. So I'm proud.
Like, bro, Kuzma will throw it down on people, bro. Do you remember a couple years ago where he tried to dunk on Joel Embiid?
No, maybe.
Oh, what? Bro, come on, man. Oh, dude. Did, yeah. But if he gets going on the fast break, like, he'll try to throw it down on someone.
I like that. You know, and it shows that he wants it. That's the kind of playmaking I like. He threw it down with confidence, and it was a poster for sure. So that stood out to me. And as for Kuzma's performance, he finished up with 24 points. It's sort of the kind of game you want him to have, especially with AD, LeBron out. You want him to take over. I remember, what was it, only a year ago, where we saw Kuzma as that third piece, as that third guy who's going to, you know, come in and be a scorer for us.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's kind of been coming in to his own lately. I know he had that injury, that one day off, I think.
Yeah, that calf. He's almost like some calf strain.
Yeah, and then, you know, an off game when he came back. But overall, I feel like he's, you know, gaining that confidence. You know, Schroeder, another strong performance that you would expect out of him. Kind of wish he stepped it up a little bit in the scoring category. I know he's got it in him. He's a great scorer. And sometimes I feel like he's just too hesitant, wants to get guys involved. I don't know if that's sort of like the narrative around him, that he should pass more or he should score. When LeBron AD are back, focus on passing. When they're out, focus on scoring, carrying the team, kind of like the way he did with the Nets before getting thrown out. But I mean, overall, it was expected with their injuries, our injuries. I kind of knew it was going to be a slow game, tired legs, and 101-93 is a very low scoring game in today's
definitely
NBA terms.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, not really sure if I had a different expectation or if I have a different reaction. It's sort of just one of those games, you know, the dog days of summer.
Yeah.
That spring.
Yeah. It's man, it's something like, I feel like, you know, and it's really like a big topic right now in the NBA is just how crazy the schedule is. You know, we're recording this after Jamal Murray just tore his ACL. Donovan Mitchell just had a really bad ankle sprain. And so a lot of talk about how this crazy NBA schedule right now is really just beating down players' bodies. You know, you mentioned Kuzma. He was out with the calf strain. I was kind of a little worried he was out there with like the tape behind his calf and a calf sleeve on the other calf. And I was just concerned, man. I didn't want him to, like, you know, worsen the injury. We had Keith out already. You know, we were just kind of beat up, you know. But, you know, like you said, we just pulled it out. We pushed through and we got the win. You know, you mentioned Kuzma. He had a great third quarter. And I thought after the third quarter, we were going to kind of run away with the game. But Charlotte just kept hanging around, man. They went to this nice little zone that they were playing with against us and just gave us a lot of trouble. But really just clutch plays by Caruso, Schroeder, and Drummond down the stretch to close out the game, man. Caruso had a really good game. You mentioned Kuzma, you mentioned Schroeder. But we got to show some love for the bald ego, Alex Caruso, man. I just love his game. And he was a plus 21 in the plus minus category. Hit 3 out of 5 from the 3-point line, 13.6 assists. So solid game from Alex Caruso. And we finished the road trip 4-3. That's the most important thing, that we came out of this road trip with a winning record without LeBron and AD.
So going back to the injuries, how much do you think the NBA is to blame for these injuries and sort of rushing these players back from an awkward year that ran really late into the year? And then on top of that, a quick sort of turnaround restart of the NBA season with an all-star break, which I just found to be crazy, like that we even had, you know, even for the sponsorship money, like how many people are really watching the All-Star game nowadays?
A lot,
like,
man.
It's lame as hell.
It doesn't matter.
Do you think people watch it?
Bro, it's still a lot of viewers, man. It's still a lot of viewers. And that's why the NBA does it, because it's money in the bank. Shawty, what you drank? Like, so it's money for the NBA, man. And that's what this season has been about. And, you know, let's just remember that the players have a player association, they have a union, you know, and they agreed to this schedule. It was voted on. They agreed to it. Part of the reason they agreed to it and the owners presented it and the league presented it is because it's about money, man. That's what it was about. You know, there's going to be a lot of money lost if they went with a longer offseason, a lot of money lost if they shortened the amount of games. And the NBA already took a big hit from last season, so they needed to recoup as much money as possible after, you know, the COVID season that we went through. And so,
yeah, but so let's think about this right now. We've got Mitchell out. We've got
Murray just went down with the ACL.
Murray just went down with the injury. We've got, you know, LaMelo, Hayward out. So how much of the actual product is going to suffer because these guys aren't able to play? Like, let's say we go into the playoffs and, well, Murray's, you know, definitely out. So are people really going to watch the playoffs that much more? Are they going to want to watch those series because their best player is out? How is that going to impact things going forward? Because, okay, yeah, you might want to sell out for a quick all-star break, but what happens if you miss out on an entire series because a guy's injured and can't play? And how much viewership are you going to miss out? How much in sponsorship money are you going to miss out on because these guys are out, these big names? And so it might seem like, hey, let's do it for the money, you know, for the Benjamins. Why not? Let's get that, you know, get that cash. But, you know, at what expense? Are we sacrificing people's health long-term for the quick buck? What do you think?
I hear you, man. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. We could have tried to maybe spread out the season a little bit longer, but it's like you have to think about it. It's also, you know, we had a very weird season last year. We had a quick turnaround, still a shorter season than normal because we're trying to get back to the normal NBA timeline. Like, that's really the goal. The goal is to get back to the normal NBA timeline so that we could eventually get back to making the normal money, or the league, not us, I should, because I ain't making no motherfucking money. so the league can get back to making the money that it was making during, like, its regular 82-game season, having its summer league, the draft, free agency, like, just the normal timeline that they're normally on. But I don't know, man. It's tough, dude. Injuries suck. Injuries suck. You look at like the Nuggets, man, like before Jamal Murray got hurt, man, their schedule was brutal. I think I heard like that they had played like 6 games in 7 days. That's ridiculous for the NBA. And so it sucks, man. Like, I agree with you that, you know, we like Embiid just came back a while ago. You know, Durant's been like nursing injuries. AD and Bron have been nursing injuries. We got Donovan Mitchell out now. Jamal Murray's out. You know, Curry's been dealing with injuries here and there. You know, every team for the most part has been dealing with injuries, and you hope that, I mean, we know we will be missing some star players in the playoffs, but you hope that you're not missing too many by the time the playoffs start. And yeah, it will damage the product a little bit, but I think for the most part, most fans will tune in for the playoffs still, regardless if there's injuries or not. And that's what the league wants, man. You know, even if viewership is still down a little bit, it's better than nothing. And they're making ridiculous amounts of money. So, and the players are getting paid. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess none of them lose in terms of financials. The fans lose, though, at the end of the day, because we have a weaker product on the field on top of all the, you know, resting that they're doing nowadays. It sucks. You don't see a superstar for more than 50, 60 games nowadays. I'm not going to say that that happens all the time, but it's been starting to happen recently a lot So let's hope they find a way to sort of compensate players' bodies after the season. Hope no one else gets injured. But anyway, yeah. On to the Lakers-Celtics. What'd you think of that?
We did lose 113 to 121, and I don't think the score really reflects the level of dominance that the Celtics, had over us. Again, injuries for us. AD out, Braun out, Keefe out, Drummond out. So, we're playing so injured, and, in the middle of the game, Gasol gets injured. He, dislocates and fractures his pinky. Plays through it, though. He's still bald. And kind of similar story, man. We came out slow to start the game. Start picking it up at the end of the, first quarter. Just really were struggling with our shooting, but we started to pick it up, picked up the energy in the second. Celtics kind of went cold. We were forcing some turnovers, but just we still weren't shooting very well. So it was kind of hard for us to pull away or pull ahead. But really, it was our defense just wasn't great, man. Our defense wasn't great. Boston was shooting at 1.55%, and they finished the game shooting 56% from the field, 44% from the 3-point line. So it was just our defense wasn't there combined with not making shots. We were kind of just hanging around. Luckily, Gasol gets hot in the third quarter, drops a couple three-pointers, and we're hanging around, keeping the deficit manageable, bro. And then the fourth quarter comes, and the Celtics just blows out the water. They get up to almost, I think at one point it was high 20s, maybe even low 30s. I don't quite remember. The bench comes in for us and they make a push to cut into the lead, and it becomes more interesting in the last kind of 3 minutes of the game, but it was really kind of, in my opinion, kind of over by then. Jaylen Brown, man. Jaylen Brown went off 40 points, 17 for 20 from the field, 6 Celtics in double digits. It's just overall not a good game for us, man. Too many injuries, tired legs, shorthanded roster catching up with us. Just, yeah. What do you think, man?
Same thing. It's sort of like another road trip on top of the road trip we just went on. These guys are tired. Again, like you said, with these crazy schedules, especially if one team's rested and the other team's not, because everyone's dealing with it, right? It's not just one team. It's not just us. It's the entire league dealing with these injuries, dealing with these fatigue issues, these crazy schedules, these back-to-backs. And so it's hard. It's hard on these guys' bodies. And, to put into perspective, you're running... You're sprinting back and forth on a court for about 35, 40 minutes a game, sometimes 5 days a week. It's going to wear, it's going to wear you down. It's just too many games, too high of an intensity in too short a time for someone not to get hurt. And it showed, and it sort of showed these past few games with the Lakers, against the Knicks, against the Celtics, against the young teams, right? Against teams that run, up and down the court, that have the legs to do this. We don't have that. And it kind of showed.
Yeah.
Nothing against the team. We did what we could, made it interesting towards the end.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And some positive news, though, that, kind of touches upon what we're talking about. We're just tired. Legs are heavy. Guys playing a lot of minutes. Not much depth to the roster. Some positive news to that is that they did report that AD has been cleared for full on-court activity and possibly will be playing tomorrow, that's Saturday, against the Utah Jazz. Probably tomorrow or Monday. Vogel did say, though, that he would be on a minutes restriction, about 15 minutes, I think, which everyone expected. They're not going to just throw him out there for 35 minutes a game from the jump. So about 15 minutes a game just to kind of get started. How are you feeling about AD coming back, bro?
Much needed help on offense, defense, everywhere. This guy's a star, man. This guy's a star. This guy's a monster. He got taken for granted for so many years playing down in New Orleans. And now that he's in LA, we kind of see him coming into his own, being a more dominant player, being a more versatile player, learning how to shoot the three a little bit better. So excited to finally see a really good player on the court with the Lakers uniform. We haven't seen that these past few weeks, with LeBron also going down, but it's going to feel good. It's been such a long time with AD especially. And I look for him to, once he integrates, to dominate. He's hungry. He's going to come out. He's going to take souls. He's that good, and that's what I'm most looking forward to with him. I'm, of course, the rotation tactics, schemes, that'll also be interesting, but just, excited to see that guy on the court. How about you?
Yeah, I'm curious, man. I'm obviously excited, but I'm also curious to see what he looks like, because to most Laker fans, he was very inconsistent to start the year, wasn't looking great, wasn't looking like his dominant, self after what we saw in the bubble last playoff. So I'm just curious, man. I'm really curious to see what he looks like when he returns. I'm also curious to see how they play with him, like his ramp up, you know, because we got to get ready for the playoffs, man. He has to get in shape and he has to get going, man. I'm obviously excited, curious to see just how he looks, curious to see how he looks alongside, you know, Schroeder, looks alongside really Drummond also, you know, how the team looks without LeBron and just AD back. So just curious to see how he builds chemistry with Drummond. Yeah, just a lot of, I mean, we really haven't seen our full team. You know, we haven't seen AD, we haven't seen Bron, we've just been dealing with injuries. So I'm just curious to see what our full team looks like because we have a pretty deep roster. So just curious, man. Let's transition into Andre Drummond. Talked a little bit about, you know, how we want to see Andre Drummond and how he looks with AD because there's already rumors floating around that the Lakers want to re-sign Andre Drummond. Before I get into the details and the challenges of re-signing Andre Drummond, because there is challenges, but you just tell me, Edgar, from your opinion, from your perspective, do you want Andre Drummond on the Lakers moving forward? Or are you an Andre Drummond fan from what you see so far? Do you feel like he'd be a good piece next to AD and Bron? What are just your initial thoughts on Andre Drummond?
My initial thoughts, my early thoughts on Andre Drummond are that he hasn't been playing his best basketball. So as far as performances, I know he's going to do better. I'm not worried about that. I'm not putting too much emphasis on that towards sort of the direction that we move into next year. I think the Lakers front office coaching staff, they've figured out the value of having a big guy in a small man's league, having a big guy inside who can, you know, get rebounds, be a presence who doesn't just allow easy baskets, easy drives to the hole. I think they've seen the value in second chance opportunities, especially the kind that this guy brings with his offensive rebounds. If you dig deep enough into the analytics, I'm confident that it's there, that the advantages are there. So I'm happy. I think, again, depending on how the payroll works out and all that, I think he would be a great addition. With a year of sort of Lakers discipline under his belt, he's going to be performing better. Once he's in better shape, he's going to be playing better. But yeah, you know, mostly the importance of having a big guy in a small man's league. Everyone wants to shoot a three. That opens up a huge hole for teams down inside. And you kind of saw it with the Nets when we played the Nets. He was sort of his dominant self. Like there was no one to control him, and he had a great game. And I think if, you know, once you add LeBron and AD to the mix, guys that are versatile inside and can also pop out, you know, make the three, it makes us a really strong, deep, diverse team. And I think the value is there. Again, the second chance opportunities. Just the other day against the Nets, two of his offensive rebounds went for, you know, a three and then an easy basket, you know, an easy putback. And that's what he brings to you. So that's what I'm most looking forward to in his game and why I think they should consider re-signing him. If there aren't better options or, you know, the payroll is right.
Well, so here's the challenge, man. So Eric Pincus on Bleacher Report put out a great article to kind of break down the challenges that go with the Dodgers wanting to re-sign Andre Drummond.
Dodgers want to re-sign him?
My fault, bro. The Lakers, dog. My bad. So if the Lakers want to re-sign Andre Drummond. So the first thing is we don't have his bird rights. So bird rights means that you have the right to sign a player to your team. You can offer more money and you can go over the salary cap to pay them. So we don't have his bird rights. So since we don't have his bird rights, that really limits what we can offer him. Eric Pincus says like we can go as low as $2 million and as high as about $9 million. Reminder that Andre Drummond, bro, was making $27 million this year, last year of his contract. So we're asking him to give up a lot of money if we're only going to pay him $9 million. So that's number one. Does Drummond take the pay cut? That's like the first thing that we have to even like think about, like, and he has to think about, does he want to take a pay cut? Like we can say, hey, take a pay cut for 1 year and we'll get you on the next one, right? So that's the first thing. Now, the next thing is if he does say he wants to take a pay cut, Eric Pincus throws out a couple different offers. There's the low, $2 million. There's a $5 million offer. Then there's a $9 million offer, you know, depending on what we do with the rest of the roster. So, but with that also, man, if we pay him $9 million and we keep everyone else on the roster, in the article, it breaks down that our tax bill would be $90 million. That's just a luxury tax. That's not the full salary cap like that we have or the full salary team salary. So between the salary and the luxury tax, we'd be paying $230 million for the roster. That's ridiculous. Like a $90 million luxury tax bill. Like that's crazy. That's, and Jeannie Buss is not going to pay that, bro. She's not going to pay that luxury tax bill. So that's not even an option. So that's
why is that crazy? Like, let's talk about that real quick. Why is that crazy? 230 million, right? How much did, PSG, you know, for those of you, you know, watch soccer, how much did they pay for Neymar? Way more than that. And that was just for a transfer fee, just for the right to negotiate with a man so he could, you know, sign it onto the team. Why are the Lakers, why is the NBA, why is America in general, American sports in general, why are they limiting our potential, man? Like,
I'm gonna have you talk to Jeannie Buss and say, hey, Jeannie, pick up this 90 mil tab real quick. Just handle that.
Just do it, man. You've got enough money. You've got enough sponsorships. It's the Lakers. It's not the Thunder. It's not.
I mean, hey, she might say, you know what? Hey, money ain't a thing. Like, you know, it is what it is. Like, I'll pay $230 million for the roster. And she might, and we might be able to bring everyone back. I just don't think that's gonna happen, man. I think it's gonna come down to us having to make some decisions. Do we resign Drummond and lose someone like Schroeder or THT or Caruso or Harrell? Because also, if we do pay Drummond, it does impact how much we can offer Schroeder. We already know Schroeder rejected that one extension for about like 84 million, I believe it was, like 4 years, 84 million. So you already know he wants more money. So it's just, I don't know. I think we're gonna have to make some decisions. And so here, I'm gonna pose a question to you, bro. So you have Schroeder, you have Drummond, you have THT, you have Caruso, and you have Harrell, right? Five players. If you had to cut one, can't bring one back, who would it be?
You know what? I'd say Dennis Schroeder.
What?
Yep.
Bro.
And only if we can sign someone who's better than he is. So that's the only sort of a condition.
But you're
right?
Not. But you're not. You're not. You're not. So understand, bro. You lose this player, you're not. We're going to be hard capped. There's no way. So if we let Schroeder go, we're expecting THT or Caruso to slide into the point guard position.
How much does Lonzo want?
It's not. Lonzo's not even an option, bro.
Why isn't he an option?
He's not an option unless it's a sign and trade, because we're already a hard cap team. So our roster is already pushing the salary cap maximum. We can only go over to re-sign our own players. So we could, Matt, I mean,
so,
we could.
So, I mean, how about we, gosh, shit.
No, bro, don't start to, this ain't motherfucking fantasy basketball, bro. Answer the question. Later. No, answer, no. The listeners want to know, bro. Answer the question. You have to get, if you want to keep Drummond, so you said you want Drummond. So
right.
I'm going to give you Drummond, but you have to let Schroeder, THC, Caruso, or Harrell go. One of the four.
Probably Harrell, just
that's the right answer.
Caruso, the defense. But then I trade Schroeder. I try to get someone better.
I mean, I do feel like if the Lakers re-signed Schroeder, I do feel like down the line they would eventually trade him. But the reason I'd be okay with losing Montrezl Harrell is because if you re-sign Andre Drummond, you're probably expecting him to play about 25 to 30 minutes a game, right?
Yep.
And so there's just, I mean, you could bring Markieff Morris back for cheaper than Harrell. And, you know, he can eat some of the backup 4 minutes. You know, Kuzma can eat some of the backup 4 minutes. And you still have Gasol on the roster. So there's only 48 minutes at center. You give Drummond, you know, 30 of them. And you give Gasol the other 18. You give him 15, whatever. And you figure it out the rest. But yeah, I think Harrell would make the sense to let him walk. And I do think he walks because he has a player option anyways. So I do think he's out. But all right. But enough about that, bro. Enough about that. So let's just do a real quick summary of the standings where we're at. So we're currently in the 5 seed. We're 1.5 games behind Denver. They just lost Jamal Murray. So I do think we'll eventually catch them once we get going. We're 2 games ahead of Portland. You know, they're right behind us. They might be able to, you know, creep up on us. We have 2 games coming up. We got tomorrow we got the Jazz, and then Monday we have the Jazz, who are the 1 seed. They're 7-3 in their last 10, but they also just lost Donovan Mitchell earlier today to a really bad sprained ankle. So what do you think, man? Without Donovan Mitchell and the possibility of AD coming back, 2 games against the number 1 seed in the Western Conference, do you think we have a chance in those games? Do you think we get one? Do you think we get both? Do you think we get neither of them? We just go 0-2?
I think we have a chance. I think we have a chance, especially with AD, but even without AD, without Mitchell, I think the Jazz aren't a shadow of who they are with him. The ball handler, the dominant player on a team goes down. It sort of throws everyone else out of whack, out of balance, because now they take on completely different roles. They're no longer just, you know, get open or stand, you know, and wave your hands. They have to take on different roles, making different runs. Maybe some of them running the offense now that he's going, you know, gone down. So it does change up the team dynamics. So I do think we have a good chance one of those two games at least, especially with having big men inside to guard Rudy Gobert, who isn't really an offensive threat. So as long as there's a big body there, he's not gonna bully Drummond. You know, Drummond's not gonna let Gobert bully him. It's just not gonna happen. So I think we can take one, if not both, of those games. Yeah, how about you?
Well, I think it's time for me to truly reveal myself to these Laker fans that I'm pretty much a pessimist when it comes to the Lakers a lot of the time. And I just think we're going to lose both, man. The Jazz are good, bro. They're a very well-coached team. Quinn Snyder will probably win Coach of the Year. Gobert will still anchor the defense. Mike Conley, Joe Ingles, Clarkson coming off the bench. They're still a deep team. Still a very great, team that plays well together. AD, maybe he comes back, but even then he's only playing 15 minutes. You know, I do feel like our team is kind of banged up a little bit, just a lot of lingering injuries. And so I think we drop both, man. I'm going to say we go 0-2 against these two. This is kind of how I normally see things for the Lakers a lot of times. I'm a pessimist, but, hopefully they prove me wrong, man.
26 points a game. You think they're going to replace that? And with who? Jordan Clarkson? Is he going to step
in? No, I don't think one player will replace it. I think they'll replace it as a team. They'll get the shot. Because the Jazz, man, they just play such good basketball where they pass the ball very well. They share the ball. They always take the best shot. They play great defense. So, I mean, we play great defense also. But and what have we seen, man? Since we've been doing the pod, we've seen when we play the better teams, the good defensive teams, our offense struggles, and the Jazz are a good defensive team, and our offense is going to have a difficult time against their defense. And I don't think we'll be able to slow their offense enough to, make up the gap. So I think we take the L both times.
All right. We shall see. I think we split, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, man. All right, man. So that does it for episode 5 of the City of Champions podcast. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support. Hey, make sure you follow us on Twitter. We're gaining some steam. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at _ City of Champs. Make sure you follow the podcast on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Pod and just give us a listen, and we appreciate the support. Thanks for hanging out. Peace.